This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
TJ Ralph executes a Blue Marlin strategy for off of South Florida. A total rebuild of a 28 Whitewater, soft head lures that gift for a gentleman from a gentleman. All this week on the Real Guy Podcast.
Clear the airwaves. The Lunker Dog is on the air.
Are you ready? This is the Real Guy Podcast.
Well, thanks for tuning into the Real Guy Podcast. Today I sit next to the two guys of the three guys that I know that actually tried to get a Blue Marlin and did get a Blue Marlin this year. I got TJ Ralph with me today.
Jeff? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming into Lunker Dog Studios. And then the world's favorite, Captain Norm.
Hey, man. It's good to be in such distinguished company.
Well, Norm, now, this whole podcast thing is becoming like, I don't know, it's almost like Christmas. And this is what I mean. TJ, the last time he was in here, he brings me a bottle of scotch. Last week, you come in with a Monte Cristo.
Right.
Nice cigar.
Yep.
And today, TJ's back in, and he brought both you and I a purple, black, and silver.
Yeah. Soft head.
Soft head, wide range.
No,
Bobby Brown.
These are Bob Ray.
Bobby Brown, Bobby not a wide range. Yeah. TJ, thanks for the lure.
Hey, man. No problem, guys. This is awesome. Really, seriously, thank you. I mean, that's real guy stuff.
I'm sure we'll get into it at some point, but that's what we caught him on.
That's the lure you got your big fish on this, was it 2 weeks ago?
About 2 weeks ago now.
Week and a half, two weeks ago.
Something like that.
So Norm and I, we've always had a strong conviction about the marlin fishing out here. And we've been talking about it. And we did it when we were kids. And then I'd like to think that we were able to get a spark out of a few people.
I think so. I mean, I think, the spark is going to continue, and I'll tell you, I'll get to that in just a little bit. But yeah, I think we've opened some guys' eyes, like, you know, TJ here. Well, I mean, TJ was up for it back when we, you know, kind of said, well, wait, you know what? We need to go back to this and take a look at it. So he didn't just come by it, you know, this year. I mean, it's been on his radar for a while.
Well, TJ has gone through a lot of shit since last time he was on the podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, he built the boat. Got his boat going.
Well, what boat? What? Talk about the boat.
So, my friend happens to own a shop up there in Pompano Beach, Marine Maintenance Managers. And after I talked to Jeff, actually, I think it was the day we all went marlin fishing back 2020, 2021.
Yeah. Was that really 3 years ago already?
It might have been. It was close to
COVID.
Wow.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think it was during COVID.
Something. Give or take, but we were talking about boats because I had an old 23 Seabird, which great boat, and I think Jeff mentioned, you know, 28 Whitewater is a real nice boat. So I, you know, started doing my research and looking around, and like I can't, you know, afford that kind of boat. Like they're a little expensive, and I reached out.
You were looking new at first.
I was just looking.
Okay.
Used, new, the used market, I mean, you might as well, like, some of the stuff, depending on what you're looking at, you might as well get new, because these guys want $200,000 for the boat that costs $220,000 new, but wait list and all the other stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They get to charge what they want because you don't have to wait. But long story short, I called up my buddy Mike over at Marine Maintenance Managers because they're full, you know, service, build boats, fiberglass, paint, the whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hey, man, I'm starting to look for possibly another boat, you know, something 27 to 32 because I wanted to, you know, include a conch because he comes across all this stuff. So it's like, wanted to make sure I included a conch and, you know, Ocean Master. I like those boats, but I'm on a trailer, so it's a big, wide boat to be dragging down federal highway.
Right.
And just stupid, dumb luck. He's like, what are you doing right now? And I'm like, nothing. I'm hanging out at the house. He goes, come over to my house. He goes, I'm going, you know, I'm over here getting lunch right now. He goes, I got something to show you in the backyard. Go over to his house. He's got a 28 whitewater hole, brand new stringers, and transom that he was saving for himself sitting in the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about it, whatever, and cut a deal. And he's like, if it's to you, you know.
So he had the whitewater, and it was already redone, or was
ready
to be redone?
It was bare hole. He just put stringers and a transom on it.
Okay. Okay.
So there was no floor. The cap wasn't on it.
So we're talking about a shell.
Yeah, it's just a
bare
shell.
Bare hull.
Yep. No tanks, nothing.
Okay.
And I was like, I want to do it. So we, you know, went back and forth a little bit and finally came to like finished product. It would cost about X amount of dollars and went for it. So, you know, I was there for the whole process of I got to pick where, you know, where I wanted the live wells in the floor, where the storage, fuel tanks. I got to lay out the bilge.
Custom build.
Might as well have been a brand new boat that, you know, going to a manufacturer that's going to let you customize stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
they gave that all to me and, you know, at a, you know, awesome price. They still maintained my boat and they went above and beyond. And
did you go with an inboard or an outboard?
I went with a bracket and two outboards, two 200 Suzukis.
Okay, all right.
And then, you know, they send it off to a welder, which ROC down in Miami. They do a lot of, like, amazing pipe work. So it was funny. I literally drew my tower on a piece of paper, like, rod holders everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's a stand-through, so you're on the console because I'm on the trailer, so I don't have to fold the thing down every time.
Right, right.
Fold it back up. And I drew this crazy thing, and I dropped it off to them. They're like, yeah, we can do that. And I'm like, oh, okay.
That's cool.
Yeah, and then, you know, they get close to the end. They're welding all the rod holders on, and they call me, and they're like, hey, TJ, we got a problem. You know, you got, I don't remember how many are even on the thing, but he's like, you got 30 rod holders on this on this T-top.
Holy Moses.
He goes, we can only fit 28.
Damn.
And I'm like, okay.
Forget it.
I'm like, okay.
Scratch it.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, no problem, man. You know, like.
28 rod holders.
28.
And he's like, oh, well, what? And I'm like, no, it's good. And he's like, well, I'm like, people down here, I guess, usually
I don't yell even at think I own stuff. 28 rods.
You know?
Do you have 28 combos?
More.
You got more than 28 combos? Yes.
Oh, he's a tackle whore.
Yeah. Nice. It's bad.
Nice.
Well, then I condone the whole 28 rod holder thing.
Well, so kind of how the T-top came about.
But how many cup holders did you end up with? That's what we want to know.
I think I got two on the back of the T-top, and I got two of those clamp ones. That's
clipped. All you need.
So I got
right there.
Six.
See that? We're not talking about a $2 million HCB.
Right.
Okay. We're not talking about a $2 million HCB. We're talking about basically this is how real guys build boats. Okay, they take something that they find, they get a good deal, they get some boys, they put together a network of guys that they know, and they put the boat together, and the boat is probably more fishy and more fishable than, you know, a $2 million HCB off the rack.
All right, so the HCB off the rack has more rod holders?
No, it has more cup holders.
More cup holders.
It has more cup holders.
Standard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And now, it may have more bean bags. How many bean bags did you get?
I have three.
Three. Okay. So
that's a lot of bean bag.
That's a lot of bean bag. But he's got good bean bag game But I think it's a nice balance between 28 rod holders, what, four cup holders?
And three beanbags.
And three beanbags. That's South Florida right there. That's how you build a boat in South Florida.
Man, and we're talking about rod holders just on the actual T-top.
Right, that's not counting the one in the gunnels.
Yeah, no,
right,
I'm so a T-topper. What do you got in the
gunnels?
So.
What do you got in the gunnels? Well, you're from Pompano, aren't you?
Yeah, so it's you guys talked about it. It's a status thing. All right, so like the more rod holders you got in the gunnel when you pull up to get fuel in the morning, okay. People look at you and they go, oh man, that guy must know what he's doing.
You got to hang.
He's got, yeah. So I can't have like five.
No. That's no good. So, like I do.
So yeah.
I have five.
It's set up, the boat's set up to do, I set it up to troll because you guys introduced me to marlin fishing, so I made sure that I had the rod holders where I needed them to troll a real spread.
Okay.
And then I have, all the other rod holders. I have group of three in the front for the kites. I got a group of three in the back for the rear kites. Mm-hmm, and then obviously that's mirrored on the other side.
Yeah.
And then I got, swivels in the front, swivels in the back, midship. So it's like, if you want to fish a rod on the boat, you can fish a rod on the boat. But
all right. So what about your live well game?
So
how'd you set that up?
It's got a 80 gallon in the front floor.
Whew.
It's got roughly 100 in the rear floor, and then it's got a 50 gallon on the leaning post.
Yo.
So how many? Do the math on that. How many gallons altogether?
80 and 40 and 50.
80, 100. So 180 and 150.
230.
230.
230
gallons of live wells. And how does the boat ride?
Amazing.
Okay.
Yeah. I usually leave that front well full.
Really?
Yeah, because depending on the load on the boat and stuff, mm-hmm. but it's just like all the contenders and the CV, the smaller ones where all the weight's in the back.
Right.
So the bow likes to come up.
Right,
because
right.
they run, like that boat cruise is probably 34 knots or something.
Insane.
34
knot cruise.
That's crazy. I got 18 and a half yesterday.
Nice.
Yeah, that's good.
Norm and I both have, the similar cruising speeds on our boats. We've done Now, let's go back to, I want to get back to Pompano a little bit. So, is it known to all you guys, all you T-toppers in Pompano, that you guys are fishing out of the T-top capital of the world?
I don't think it's known to everybody, but I've listened to you guys for long enough, so I've been enlightened.
I think it's out there.
Yeah, I've been enlightened on the T-top situation that's going on in North Broward County there.
Right. Because I haven't heard, hasn't been a lot of debate about that.
Because I don't think it's debatable.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. When I say something, it's usually fairly debatable.
Yeah.
But I think labeling Pompano as a T-top capital of the world was spot on.
Just
pretty much undebatable.
Just the way it is.
And acceptable.
And Grundon's.
Grundon's.
Do you have a pair of Grundon's on the boat? Course,
they're in the boat.
See? I sport my Grundon's on the boat.
I was going to say,
I keep my Grundon's on the boat.
See, now Norm, if he lived in Pompano, which he doesn't, he would be like a glorified T-topper.
No, I wouldn't.
Kind of.
I would be an amateur. No, I only have five rod holders in the T-top.
Yeah, but you had a classic boat with a diesel, but you're still a T-topper.
Yeah, but there's, you know what though, I think I'd kind of fade into the background in Pompano because there's so many beautiful boats in Pompano, so many gorgeous boats. I mean, you got Merritt; it's the home of Merritts.
So I'm fishing Intercoastal the other night.
Sorry about that.
But
I'm always looking at Merritt, because I put it in at 14th. So every time I'm there,
you see it.
Yeah, everything's right there. Like Alan Jackson's boat sitting on the, getting serviced.
He just got a new one.
Boat. Yeah,
he just had a new one built.
Yeah, it's
like
insane.
A 58.
Yeah,
I think it's smaller than
bigger than
ones.
The front deck on my boat.
Well, Timmy and I are fishing in Intercoastal the other night, and we run north to Pompano.
Uh huh.
And I mean, I'm not holding my nose up or anything, but there's this big difference between coming out of the Middle River and coming out of Lake Santa Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I'm down there and I'm fishing and everything, I kind of feel like it's a major step down. when I go south, I feel that way when I get to Hollywood and Hallandale, but then you get into Golden Beach and you're
All right.
And it's a little bit more metro. But when I go north down the Intercoastal, I'm thinking to myself, man, I'm really kind of schlepping it.
Yeah.
And I'm glad.
Well, that's kind of how I feel.
And I'm glad it's at night because I don't want people seeing
you
me.
You want to just fly under the radar.
I want to get in, get out. Pompano, do what I got to do, and get out.
Yeah. Now, are you saying that you're kind of ashamed to be fishing in Pompano? I mean, is that, you know, something that's, you know, in the back of your mind that, man, you know, I hope nobody sees me here while we're talking about it on the podcast?
I mean, I wouldn't exactly want to call it, like, ashamed, but I find
myself... It's like a guilty pleasure?
I find myself falling into that camp, like, when people look down their nose at my ugly sticks. Like, I'm doing the same shit when I get to Pompano.
Let me tell you something. If anybody's looking down their nose at an ugly stick, you got serious problems.
Dude, people got serious problems out there, Norm.
You know, I came this close to getting a set of ugly stick spinners for my boat when I first bought it. Because it was charter, you know, for charter fishing. I was this close. And then I met you and Sean, and you guys gave me a great deal on Lunker Dogs. So that's I got a full set of Lunker Dogs.
You got all the Lunker Dogs.
I got most of them, yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I used to fish all ugly sticks back, you know, when they were affordable, and then they slowly went up. You know, they're still more affordable than, you know, a lot of the other stuff, but they slowly started creeping, and then I went over to Star Rod while they still had their, mm-hmm. you know, warranty that they were broke, you change it out, and that's gone now too. So now you got a whatever $130 rod that no warranty on it anymore.
Yeah.
But well, the whole ugly stick thing is going to shit anyway.
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
I broke a fucking ugly stick.
Yeah.
It's...
What? Wait, hold on. Whoa, stop.
I'm 54 years old. I've had ugly sticks since I can remember. Never have I heard about somebody breaking an ugly stick. Never have I broken an ugly stick.
How did you do that?
I've broken everything.
I've seen them put them in trash compactors.
All right.
You remember that ad?
I do.
The wife gets upset. She throws his ugly stick in the trash compactor.
And this is...
And walks away, and he just takes it out and goes fishing?
And this is what I'm talking about. Things have gone to shit in this world.
I want to know how you broke an ugly stick.
I don't even know how I broke it. I look over and the tip of the ugly stick is broken. Now, this is a new ugly stick.
What kind of world do we live in?
Exactly, my point. My kid's graduating high school next year. She's graduating high school in the time where it's acceptable for an ugly stick to be broken?
No, it's not acceptable, it isn't acceptable at any time.
Right. And that's my point.
It's like not being able to find Michelob beer.
Oh, we got a lot of emails and I heard some messages. Dude, that struck a chord, the beer thing.
Did it?
Well, you just don't get that. I don't want to rehash it, but I don't understand how you just all right, so even more important than the fact that you broke one, which is unheard of, what did they do about it? Did they stand behind their product like they always have, or at least they say they have?
Well, we're going to find out because I haven't brought it back, but it was a Bass Pro Shop purchase.
Oh, you're fucked.
No, you're not fucked at Bass Pro Shop. You can do anything and bring it back there.
You can?
Kind of.
I don't think I've ever...
I know a guy that brought back a used cast net, and they took it.
Really?
But anyway, Bass Pro Shop is very similar to the... Bass Pro Shop's very similar to the ugly stick thing.
Okay, well...
Like, it's totally acceptable to roll into Bass Pro Shop and blow your load in there. I'm not... If I do go to Bass Pro Shop, I go, like, once every 24 months. I accumulate, like, a half a dozen of those gift cards.
I just got one for my birthday this week. The kid gave me one.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I go into Bass Pro Shop with my gift cards and everything.
Yeah.
But anyway, I broke a fucking ugly stick. TJ, how old are you?
I'm 30 years old.
30 years old. You're growing up in an era where there's fucking broken ugly sticks, dude.
And no Michelob. Yeah.
And no Michelob.
On the East Coast.
How can you do that?
Were you a
Bud Light? Dude, how do you deal with that kind of adversity in life?
I don't know. You just wake up and you got to keep going sometimes.
Just that's it.
Yeah.
All right. So tell us about that Blue Marlin. Tell us about your spread. Let's hear the story.
Hold on. I want to go back.
We're not done?
Well, so I was thinking about this way this whole thing came about, right?
Okay.
So TJ has enough gumption to go with us to pull a spread around.
Right.
So TJ, after the day we went and pulled the spread around, mm-hmm. was this like a thing in your head where like, I'm going
did
to
it
catch
open your eyes to right.
I'm
fishing
going to
in a
catch
different
a blue
way.
Marlin out here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there wasn't a doubt in my mind that I was going to try to do it before that, which is why I reached out to you in the first place, and then we all went fishing and all that. Because I've seen them. I've seen them out there. I'm not fishing. I wasn't fishing for them. Mm-hmm. You know, be out there dolphin fishing, and all of a sudden there's a hole blown in the water, you know, 200-300 yards off the bow of the boat. There's dolphin getting thrown around like they're flying fish, and you know, big blue silver thing coming up out of the middle. I mean, it's like one of those Guy Harvey shirts.
Yeah.
Well, before you went with Norm and I, did you think that it was a bigger deal than it actually is?
100%.
I think a lot of people get caught up in that because they're thinking, man, I gotta re-gear up. I gotta do all this stuff to go get my blue marlin. And I think people think that it's a lot bigger deal than it actually is.
Yeah. The difference, I mean, as far as gearing, it's like, all right, are you leaving the dock to go kite fishing or are you leaving the dock to go trolling? That's the difference.
To some degree, yeah. I agree with that. Yeah.
So
I agree with that.
I mean, there's some other differences. You're going to go marlin fishing. Like,
don't fish
your 40-pound dolphin leader.
No, right.
Like, that's not going to turn out well. But, you know, if you're putting trolling stuff on the boat, you're 90% of the way there.
Right. Exactly.
Before talking, you know, talking about it and asking questions. And
it's a 10% adjustment. That's all it is.
It's about it.
All right, so let's take it from there. Your 10% adjustment, because it wasn't like you weren't familiar to trolling.
Right.
So bring the audience through what your 10% adjustment was.
The 10% adjustment is scale your leaders up, troll a little bit bigger of a bait, and put out some teasers or a dredge.
That's called stepping up your game.
And that's it. I mean, I'm pulling two because I just can't half do something. So I'm just all in on it. But with two, I can't go fishing with less than like three people. You know, if I was pulling I was pulling one, you know, my girlfriend and I fish all the time, best friend. So it's like, it's awesome because she's into it probably more than, you know, fishing in general, more than I am. So it works out that I always got two.
Oh, that's a slam dunk.
So then, you know, it's my dad or
who
one of my buddies or whoever else. We got the third and we're good to go. But I mean, you can go out there with one dredge, two rods. You're not even a dredge. Pull a squid chain or a teaser.
Yep.
And two rods and you're marlin fishing.
And you can do it out of a small skiff.
Yeah.
I mean, Jay Edwards was the third person that was in our network that got a fish this summer.
He got one.
And his boat's tiny.
That was like a
20-foot dusky.
That was like the same day as me or
I think it was like
same couple of days.
I think it was right there in that same weekend.
So,
yeah.
I don't want to get too off, but on that topic, so when I hooked my fish, I believe we were 4 or 5 days after the moon. What's your guys' thought on that? I mean, I'm not a live or die, but
I think there's certain places where the moon phase definitely affects the marlin fishing. I mean, I think it's definitely something in the Caribbean, St. Thomas. Here, I think it's more of a function of bait and the availability of bait. I think when those little mahis are here, I think that's prime time. So whenever they start really showing up. Now, some guys will swear by the moon here. And some guys will swear, oh, you got to go before and after the moon in May and June. You know, I think it's more of a function of bait here.
And I'm asking, you know, for myself to learn as well as anybody that's listening to this, because just information, you know, so.
Yeah.
But it's something that I noticed. I wrote everything down.
Okay, good.
I keep track of things like this.
Yes, good.
So
you got a thing that you keep.
Just got a log.
I got a couple of different versions of it, but yeah.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
See, I got no smart journal.
No, I don't remember shit.
It's not for whatever. I caught five kingfish today and the tides and the moon and the wind and blah, blah, blah. It's for, you know, like I was trying to dial in my, you know, wahoo fishing. Started writing stuff down.
Mm-hmm.
Found patterns. Right. I don't write stuff down anymore for that.
You know,
I understand it.
You got the pattern down.
I know what I'm looking for.
Right.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
I'm not a professional marlin fisherman by any means. I went out there and did, you know, followed your guys' guidance and all that. And, you know, I got one. So I made sure I wrote it down.
That just makes me feel great.
So the next time I go out there and I get one, because I will get another one, I'm going to write that down. And then hopefully over time, I'll see whatever pattern is there or what pattern I have. And then I won't write it down anymore. But.
Yeah. Well, I think you should for one reason, and I may sound hypocritical because I don't keep a log, but suffice it to say, you're a lot younger than we are, okay? And I think one of the things that you'll find that you'll thank yourself for later is keeping these logs so you can see down the road what you did 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And see how the fishery has changed over time. And I think if you don't look at it from sort of a short-term perspective, but look at it long-term, mm-hmm. long down the road, play the long game with this.
Right.
I think you'll find not only will you come to understand the fishery better, but you'll understand the changes in year after year what's happened in the fishery. Right. Okay. Like, for example, I would have told you, if you had asked me 15, 20 years ago, when the best time to go dolphin fishing is, for example, okay, I would have told you April, May, and June. And now it's really September, October, mostly September and October.
Yeah, it's pushing later and later. It used to be summertime.
For whatever the reason. And that could change completely next year, but I've noticed the pattern over the last 5 years or so that they start showing up later and later. And I don't know what that function is. That's past my pay grade.
I don't try to figure it out either.
No.
All right. So I talked to you two guys about this. I've talked to quite a few other dudes about this, but probably the only dude that I talked to about this that actually holds any weight would have been Skip.
Yeah.
Skip Smith. And Skip's theory is it's a wintertime thing. My theory is it's a summertime thing. Now,
yeah,
you know what I mean? So to answer your question, whether I think it's a moon phase or not, mm-hmm. I don't think that has a lot to do with it. What I think has a lot to do with it is a small mahi. I think mm-hmm. that's one of the few things that we can say out here. When the small mahi are around, that's your chances of getting a blue marlin go up dramatically.
Yes.
So I think you got that. And then moon phase and tides and all that. I don't know really how all that shit works. But what I do know is things get fishy and then things get unfishy. Last week, for whatever reason, things were unfishy.
Very unfishy. They were very unfishy this week.
The week before yeah. that, things were fishy.
Yeah.
I was catching tarpon and snooks and mm-hmm. jacks and going through, you know, 2 dozen baits a trip, blah, blah, blah. The yeah. very next week, things aren't fishy anymore.
Yeah.
The ocean is totally fucked up. You're never going to figure it out.
No.
You will go crazy trying to figure no. it out. But you can figure out a particular spot or area. Going out of Lighthouse Point, if you're doing it over and over again, I'm sure you can develop a decent rhythm.
Yeah.
I can't develop a decent rhythm simply because I'm doing too many tarpon trips. Well, so I go when I can
yeah,
and keep right. my fingers crossed.
And you know, I've found there's some guys, and I think we've talked about this on some other podcasts, and Skip even referred to it too, talking about fishing the sword grounds for blue marlin. And, you know, where I fished yesterday is where you caught your fish.
Right.
Okay. And I caught my fish not too far away from that. Actually, no, I was north of you. Okay. You were off the Double Diamonds.
Correct.
In out in Miami. And I'm not sharing, I'm not sharing secrets here because this is something we want everybody to be able to do. And we want to spread this word. We want to tell people, hey, there's places where you can go and catch these fish.
I mean, hell, I sent you guys the coordinate. I mean,
right.
I'll give it, if anybody asks, I'll give it to you. Like, that fish isn't there right now.
No, he's not.
But there's...
There's a reason why he went there.
Those marlin are in that area for a reason.
Right.
So you go and work that area. It's not a spot.
And that's what I was just about to get to, okay? And that is that for some reason, I really like the Hollywood Hills. And I especially like the western side of the Hollywood Hills. Because if you go straight out of Hollover, just north of the inlet... If you look at your chart plotter, it goes from 650 feet down to 950, and then east of 950, it comes back up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's like a trench there, and if you look at it, it reminds me of a less pronounced pocket from the Chub K pocket. It looks that the geographical features of the bottom are very similar to the pocket in Chub K. And that's where, when we fished, all three of us fished, that's where we caught those dolphin.
Yep.
Okay, I caught my blue marlin here at that spot, a little bit further east, okay, on the other side of it. But that's where I like to run down to and fish. And, you know, for whatever the reason, that whole area, that pocket in there is really super fishy.
And you're fishing out... You're usually what? You go out to the 50s or you're out in the high
40s? I'll start at the double zeros.
Gotcha.
I'll start at the double zeros because the nice part about that is most of that is on the is on the inside of the double zeros. It's like the 0102. It's really close to the beach. You got very deep water right there.
Quit using the coordinates.
Well, we're talking past the audience.
Well, it's not like past the audience.
It's about 3 miles offshore, just north of Hollover Inlet.
Okay. There you go.
All right.
3 miles offshore, north of Hullover.
Yep.
Double zeros.
The double zeros is actually outside of that, but it's really the 0102. But nevertheless, that area has produced quite a bit of fish for me in the past, and so I really like going down there. Now, a lot of guys out of Port Everglades will go straight out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, until they reach 1,100 feet of water. All right? And that's... You got to go a lot further. You got to run a lot further than you have to run down south. So I'd rather run, you know, 5, 6, 7 miles down south rather than run 19 miles straight out east.
Yep.
And I think you got better... I think there's better... I think it's a better bottom feature there.
Yeah, because I come out of Hillsboro most of the time. It's just the closest ramp to the house. And if I'm going trolling, I usually just head south. Two reasons for that. I like the bottom down there.
Yeah.
You know, you can see on a flat day, you can see the water moving in certain areas, and it's moving a little different, whether it's, you know, in my head, it's upwellings and different eddies spinning off of the Gulf Stream's flowing off of the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see, and then the weeds will group up in certain places,
right.
and you kind of, like, stuff's changing in this area. And
it holds a lot of bait.
And that's one thing I noticed the day I caught that fish is, you know, we were in a pocket of a little bit colder water. Like, I'm talking, like, half a degree than what I was seeing the rest of the day on my machine.
Right.
Which, again, I'm just telling you.
So there's probably some sort of little upwelling there or something.
That's my guess, you know, in that general area.
I had the same conditions yesterday. Same exact conditions yesterday, and that's the only place I found fish yesterday.
Yeah. So then the second reason I run south is current's going north, so I can fish south as long as I want. And then when I decide to come home, you're double speed home.
Yeah.
Now, all my boats have been slow as piss. So I basically have to run south, whether I'm sword fishing or marlin fishing or mahi fishing, because I don't have the juice to make a decision like, okay, I'm going to fish off of Palm Beach today, or I'm going to fish off Fowey today. I pretty much can only go like 10, 15 miles from the port.
Yeah, but you know, let me tell you something. One of my mentors was a guy named Andy Anderson. And Andy was on the boat when Sam Jennings caught his 1,050-pound blue marlin in Bimini, the first grander caught in the Bahamas. during the 1980 tournament. I don't remember if it was the first Bertram Hatter. No, it wasn't a Bertram Hatter shootout. It was one of the BBC tournaments. Anyway, they won the tournament. And Andy told me that a lot of times you don't need the fastest boat if you know where you're going.
Definitely don't need the fastest boat. That's good advice.
Yeah. You don't need the fastest boat, you know, as long as you know where you're going.
I've pretty much been consistent on having the slowest boat in pretty much any fleet I've ever been in.
Oh, no, I got you beat.
Even tarpon.
I got you beat. My boat, I had to rewheel my boat.
Right.
And it was overwheeled at one point, and then now it's grossly underwheeled. So instead of getting a 21 knot cruise, I'm getting like 18 and a half knots. But here's the deal. The engine runs better. It runs cooler. And it raised that fish.
Right.
I think there's something to that, you know.
Well, all my boats cruise the same. The Maritime cruised at 18. The Bertram's cruised at 18. And the Zerdog cruised at 18.
You're stuck at 18.
Hey, dude. Well, yeah. You know, it's like, it's not like I'm one of these Pompano guys that can run around at 40.
Yeah. Well, listen, my boat is faster than both of your guys' boats.
Oh, yeah.
But by no means is it fast, because I could have put 300s on that thing, and it would have took it.
Now, what do you have on it?
I have twin 200s.
In 27 feet?
It's a 28, yeah.
28 feet? That's fine. Now,
No, it's more than fine.
It's plenty. Dude, I tried to talk him into doing a single.
I couldn't.
I tried to talk. Like,
I almost did.
I was like, do a single. It'd be way less expensive.
Yeah, but now we have a boat to run over to Bimini on.
That's the exact reason I went with two.
All right, I explained this to TJ. He had to get his double engines and all the fancy stuff and his 24 rod holders on his thing and 28. All that. 28.
I'll count them and let you guys know. It probably more than that.
Dude, next time we go fishing, that'll be my pastime. I'll just count rod holders. But the point I'm making is I was trying to get him to go super crazy efficient.
All right.
With the charter.
Simple.
The charter thing in mind. And then also, Norm, in today's day and age, the tow company will get you at 150 miles away.
Yeah, that's true.
So even if we were in Treasure Key, we'd only have to get towed down to Joe's Marina in order to be in range for the sea tow. And these engines are hard to break.
Are you commercially registered?
Yeah.
Then you don't qualify for commercial towing insurance. They won't do it.
They'll screw you.
Yeah, no, you're screwed. I'm screwed. Nah. So if I break down, I got to call somebody. I can't call CETO because they'll charge me $2,500.
But
yeah.
Yeah, the reason at the end of the day we went, you know, with the two motors is I was going to do a single 350, which would push that boat, you know, would push it fine.
Right.
But the two is nice, and you know, just for that dependability,
and the guy
Mike over at the shop, you know, he's my buddy, so I'm not, you know, but
you wanted two engines.
I wanted two.
It's your boat.
He's the one that talked me into two, but he showed me the price difference between servicing the 350 that I was looking at, the Suzuki, and the twin 200s, and it was like $150 or something.
Okay.
It's basically the difference, that was
your decision. That's what made you decide then, right then and there.
Was the service.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the, like, $150 isn't going to break me. Basically, it's the, you know, the lower unit and the engine oil, but the engine, it's not even that much more than the single, because the single is such a bigger motor. These are little inline fours.
And you know, that's the thing that most people, when they buy boats, it doesn't compute with them. And I think it's one of the reasons why so many people buy boats and then sell boats very quickly is they don't really, their thought process into how much it's going to take to own the boat it doesn't factor into it. And so when you go into it thinking like, all right, it's going to cost me this much to keep the boat, you know, which is why, like, you know, we've talked about this before, and even on the podcast with other guys, you know, guys are just, you know, there's a lot of guys that are out there and they're buying these, you know, these super high performance engines without any thought to how much it's going to cost them to own that engine.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, it's kind of one of those reasons why I like a single inboard diesel, yeah. You know, for the same reason you chose, really, in a lot of ways, it fits your budget.
Yeah. I mean, either one would have fit in, but the, you know, the main reason with the 200 was the efficiency. Cause I'm getting like, I mean, it's a gas, so it's, you know, it's not a diesel, right. Diesel engine. I'm getting like 1.8, 1.9 at 32.
Well, that's not bad.
You know,
that's not bad.
All right.
That's not bad.
So you got the boat now.
Yep.
You did your thing. You got your Blue Marlin. I want to know if you feel different now that you got your Blue Marlin than you did before you got your Blue Marlin.
As far as how I feel, it's more go do it again. I mean, that's how I feel about it. You know,
I feel vindicated.
You guys, like, you told me it could be done. I've seen them. I know it can be done. Norm caught one a month, you know, or a couple weeks before I got my shot. And I knew it was a matter of time. And that's what you guys kept telling me, is put your time in. And once I got them, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. It was the happiest I've ever been to catch a fish, you know, in my life. But it was...
I'll tell you, I feel vindicated, because I've been talking about it for 2 or 3 years. And every time I mentioned it to somebody, they kind of looked at me and snickered, mm-hmm. or kind of laughed under their breath, like, oh yeah, you're gonna, you know, and meanwhile we're gonna go dolphin fishing today, you know. Oh, I caught 20 dolphin today. What'd you catch? Nothing. Yeah. You know, I was pulling a different spread.
I can see that doing for something sure.
different. So anyway, TJ, getting back to do you feel different now that you got the Blue Marlin as before you got the Blue Marlin? Like, has it changed the way your outlook is on the way you fish?
On that aspect, yeah, 100%. Like, I'm not going out there and dolphin fishing. That's what I told Shelby as soon as we caught the thing.
So you feel like you're on another level now?
Yeah.
Well, you know why? Because you're on another level now, TJ. You, when you go out there and you specifically target a Blue Marlin, and then you do what you set out to do, you put yourself on a new level. Congratulations.
And, you know, let me tell you something. There's not a lot of guys doing that right now. Okay? There's not a lot of guys that are sticking their necks out there saying, hey, I'm going to go do something different. I'm going to step it up. I'm going to step up my game. Okay? And right now, there's so many guys that are in South Florida that are just dialed into fishing a certain way all the time, that it doesn't occur to them that there's something else out there. And so when guys like us come along and we say, you know what, I'm not going to go dolphin fishing today because I don't need that instant gratification, and I'm not going to be that brand of soft.
Right.
Okay. I'm going to commit to a process of doing something that very few other people are doing right here. You go to the Bahamas and they're doing it. You go to St. Thomas, they're doing it. Certain times of the year in the Keys when there's tournaments, they're doing it. But they're not doing it in South Florida. There's very few guys. Yeah. It's almost like an underworld?
The way the whole culture is going.
Right, people, it's a cultural thing.
People just constantly want to lower the bar and then turn around and brag about how it's okay to lower the bar. Dude, not really. I just want to go out and get a few bonitas and maybe a blackfin. And you look at them and you're like, quit lowering the bar, you bastard, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Well, because I was always brought up to think that you never lower the bar. You always raise the bar.
Right.
And then if you are lowering the bar, it's an exception.
Or, you know, it's like I said, you know, the fun fish division in all the tournaments is now the mainstream way to fish. Because when we were younger, even younger than you, our fathers, we fished with our fathers, and we didn't go dolphin fishing. We didn't go king fishing. Wahoos were a rare and incidental catch. And
the 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911, and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Now, you know, it's like that's how everybody fishes. But most of the, you know, we had billfish tournaments.
Right.
Okay. We didn't have dolphin tournaments. There was no such thing as a dolphin tournament before, what, 1995? I don't know.
But you know, TJ's one of the luckiest dudes that we know. Because Shelby, his wife, is into the sport fishing thing.
Oh, man.
And I think she got as tickled out of raising the bar as TJ did. So and her post was better than yours.
Oh, 100%.
She was fired up.
Oh, yeah. She's definitely jacked.
No, I mean, so we can get into the whole story, but
yeah.
I mean, when that fish came up and I realized what was happening, I was up, you know, in the stand through, and I looked back and to tell somebody to do something, you know, it's like, this is it.
Somebody right? do something.
And he was captaining.
Yeah.
And, but I didn't have to tell her, I didn't, not a word came out of my mouth. Cause I looked back and the rod was already in her hand.
Wow. All right. Like, cool.
She was on it.
Yeah.
And then fish came up and it ate. And she was already holding it.
Now, did it come up on the teaser first?
I didn't see it. We didn't see it.
Take us through what happened.
So if you want, like, you want to start with just the whole spread.
What was your spread and what happened?
So I was pulling two dredges, which they're, I believe they're like 32 inch bars or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they're those fish razor, the Mylar strip ones with the Ballyhoo printed on them. And I had a couple, you know, I was messing with a couple of different setups with the, you know, with the squids and all that stuff. But I started pulling those because I could pull them faster because it's just less drag on them.
Okay.
And I wanted to be able to move around it. 6-7 knots,
right? Depending on right. So you got your teaser game dialed in.
Yeah. So pulling two of those, and those are about sitting right on about the first wave,
right?
First wave behind the motors there, and then I had two shorts, hook baits. Those were Islanders. So the one was I think a pink and white, and the other one was a classic blue and white
with ballyhoos behind them.
Ballyhoos, horse ballyhoos. All
on what?
All,
what leaders?
200. The Islanders are on 150.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mold crafts on the riggers are on 200 because it's a bigger lure.
Yeah.
Of course.
I listen.
Yeah, well, it's not rocket science. Yep. But there's some That's things that work. This is quick. A client of mine fishing the white marlin game up there in the Maryland area.
Yeah.
So he messages me the other day, and he says, I want to get a blue. He says, what should I drag? I says, don't change anything you're doing. I says, just take a mold craft and put it behind your teaser.
Yeah.
Which he did. And the only fish they caught that day was a blue marlin. It's not rocket science, but why is it so hard for people to make that commitment?
I don't think two reasons. One, because they're soft. And we've talked about that. They can't stand the thought of leaving the dock, not catching anything, and coming back to the dock empty-handed. Okay, that's not in anybody's thought process.
Now Shelby, she's perfectly fine with that, right?
She was after I went with you guys. I was fired up about it. I'm like, I'm going to do this. So I figure out dredges. You know, I rigged up some bigger baits than all the dolphin stuff I had, and she's kind of looking at me. You know, I'm like, we're going to get one. We fished five trips total.
Okay.
The first one or two trips, she's kind of looking at me because fishing like 6-8 hour day, trolling around, big baits, dredges, looking at Fort Lauderdale or Hollywood or whatever, and nothing, you know. There's nothing out there going to eat those. I mean, a big dolphin... big wahoo tuna or something behind the boat, but you're looking for the man.
Yeah.
And she's kind of looking at me, and then I think it was the third trip. Again, I didn't see anything in the dredges or in the spread, and then it was the same rigger.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you if it was the same bait, but it was the same. It was my right long. I see it get smacked out of the water, big hole, and the fish piled on it, pulled drag for about 5 seconds or something, and then it was gone. And again, I haven't been doing this very long, and I can't tell you, but my guess is it got stung by the hook, probably. And it decided, yeah. I don't want whatever that was, and it never, and we never saw it again.
Right.
But once she saw that, then she kind of like
her eyes sort of opened.
She's kind of like, okay, there's some, you know, there's a little something here.
She started to believe in it a little bit.
A little bit.
Okay.
And then obviously when she saw it behind the boat. And then got to, you know, pull on the thing for a while and all that. I mean, you know, we'll go. So again, back to the whole bite. It came up, swatted the bait, and as soon as that bait came back down in the water, the fish halfway out, like I'm standing backwards in the tower looking at it.
Right.
And the fish comes halfway out of the water and piled on top of the bait, went under, disappeared for about.
What, did a little one hopper?
Yeah, like jumped right on it.
Right.
That's called committing suicide.
Yeah, that's the one hopper. Nice. Yeah.
And, you know, went back under the water, and I don't know, half second later, time's kind of weird in those situations. Thing came up out of the water, like every marlin video you ever seen on YouTube or wherever you've seen it. And I can tell you, because I was there, it's 10,000 times better.
Than that video. Right.
That is what we live for.
Oh, that's...
It's that bite. It's that moment. That's what causes men throughout history to spend fortunes, blow marriages, blow everything that they ever worked hard for in life that one instant high.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was...
That you're not going to get out of a dolphin, that you're not going to get out of a wahoo, that you're not going to get out of even a skyrocketing kingfish. No. Okay.
Don't say with such dissension.
It's
like,
just...
Jesus.
It's just... But I'm not that kind of soft, okay? I'll go 6 trips before I get to see that. Fine.
And, yeah, I mean, that thing... Yeah, it's completely worth it. I'm not dolphin fishing. I can tell you that. I'm not going dolphin fishing.
But if you catch one, fine.
I'm happy with it.
I mean, that the same day that we all fished together, we caught 2 nice fish.
Don't get me wrong. Someone calls me for a trip and they want to go dolphin fishing. We're going dolphin fishing. But when I'm going fishing, I'm going to go pull big stuff.
There's been a few generations, TJ, that have taught their kids that dolphin is not bycatch. You at 30 years old, when you and Shelby have kids and they're growing up, maybe, just maybe, they'll understand that dolphin and kingfish and tuna and wahoo are bycatch.
Yeah. Well, but you know, but here's the other thing. Okay, that people are missing. You can still pull this Bobby Brown, okay, and catch dolphin. In fact, it's a damn good bet that the biggest dolphin you'll catch all year will be while you're marlin fishing, because that's the way it's done everywhere else in the world. Look at all those great big giant dolphin that they're catching down in Costa Rica right now. Yeah. They're not dolphin fishing out there. They're marlin fishing. They're dragging stuff like this, and they're catching great big giant dolphin. And they do that everywhere. Everywhere you go. Look at the Bahamas. Look at up north on the East Coast. And they catch nice fish on a marlin spread. So you know, when you say you're going dolphin fishing, all that means is that you're scaling down your tackle and you're lowering your chances at catching a really nice fish, even a big dolphin, when you do that.
So funny part about all that is we were actually fishing the Delbach dolphin tournament.
Right.
When we caught the fish.
That's right. Yeah. You told me that.
My dad's friend called us up and like, hey, you guys want to go fish this tournament? You know, it's for a good cause and all that stuff. And we're like, sure. And a couple of days beforehand, I think my dad brought it up to me, but he's like, hey man, do you want to just want to pull the marlin spread? And he goes, we're in a hero or zero. And I was
that's
like,
it. That's the
I was
idea.
Like, I was like, I was thinking the same thing. I go, we're going to either... We're going marlin fishing, and hopefully catch a big dolphin so we can wait for the tournament, but we're going to go marlin fishing.
Now is your dad's Tom, right?
Yep.
Okay, so has Tom grown up fishing, or was it something that he, you know, because that's something an old-timer like us would come up with. That's an idea that an old-timer like us would come up with.
My grandfather's family moved down here to Hollywood when he was a kid, so my dad was born here.
Okay.
And my grandpa grew up Hollywood Beach, you know, like swimming. and you know, they didn't have a whole lot of money, swim off the beach, go get lobster and stuff for dinner, spearfishing and stuff, bring it back in. So yeah, I mean, I grew up in around water fishing. So Tom, my dad, Tom, my grandpa, and me, Tom, which that's what's the T and TJ is for. Right. And yeah, so grew up fishing.
See, that's the, so he's grown up with the right influence, and he's carrying it forward.
I don't know if you know this or you know this, but your dad emailed me a nice little letter about you catching that marlin, and you could tell it meant a lot to him that you stepped up the game, raised the bar, made it happen. That's an old school way of thinking. I couldn't imagine, you know, like watching my kid do it. So a blue marlin means a lot, not just to you, the captain, but to the whole family. And families fish together, stay together. Families that fish together love each other. And it's a big fucking deal. And pretty much what makes the fishing world go around.
Well, and not only that, I mean, it's something, I've said it before on other podcasts, but you did something, TJ. We both did. Okay? Because not only did we prove that it could be done here, all right, we did it in a generation that doesn't, that just looks at us like we've got three eyeballs. Yeah. But now we're proving that that's not the case. And, you know, the funny part is there's so many people that are still not stepping up their game, even when they know, like they have that experience of seeing a blue marlin. There were a lot, you know, in the month of June and July, the 2 months of June and July this year, there were a lot of blues between West Palm and Key Largo. A lot of them. And that just coincided with that Mahi run. And not to beat that up, but there were so many boats that went out there and saw fish, but they just weren't ready for them.
Right.
They didn't step up their game. They weren't ready. And, you know, when guys like you and me set out to do it, and we're prepared at the right time, that's when preparation meets opportunity, and that's when you can score. And I've said that before. And you did that. I did that. And, you know, when something like that is done in South Florida, it raises eyebrows. Okay? And speaking of raising eyebrows, I'll just kind of I'll leak this to our listeners, but there's going to be a little bit of coverage from Marlin Magazine on this.
That's awesome.
I think there should be. Coming up. No,
there's going to be.
It's coming.
Norm reached out. I'm spilling the beans. Yeah. Norm reached out to Marlin Magazine. He's like, dude, he goes, you guys write about all these exotic places in the world where you can catch blue marlin and all that kind of stuff, and we're whacking them here off of Fort Lauderdale, and you guys don't write about it. And Marlin Magazine...
Yeah, they responded.
The right response was, you know, Norm, you got a point there. Mm-hmm. And then as they're hashing through their article and figuring out what to write, guys like you get one. Right. And they're like, oh, yeah, no shit. This is a story. But it's funny to me how that story has been forgotten. Because the fish have always been there.
They've always been there.
They're always going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But do you going to have the fishermen to go out there and actually target them?
Well, like I said, I hope we've opened some eyes, and I think I know TJ's, you know, definitely on board, and I think there's going to be more like him.
So, TJ, we got to wrap this thing up, but what's changed for you personally since you started your marlin quest?
Just like anything with fishing, when you first start out with whatever you're trying to target, it's kind of foreign. I mean, you got a rod, you got a reel, you got a boat, you got your tackle or whatever. But you just, you know, you're trying to dial yourself in. And because you haven't got one, you don't have that confidence. And we got one. So
now the confidence is there.
We're going to go get another one. Right. You know, that's what it is. And, you know, the whole deal, like, that's cool. My dad emailed you. I didn't even know about that. But he was on the boat. He was the guy that leaded the fish. I never came down out of the, I was driving the boat. Never came down out of the tower until...
How jacked was he that he got to do that with you? It's
one of those weird things. You know, when we first hooked the fish and took off greyhounding, we realized, like, all right,
this is happening.
We did it, you know, and it's kind of quiet for a second, yeah. And then I started doing, you know, captaining. So, hey, Shelby's got the rod. I'm gonna put the boat in a turn, go to the bow, and start going after the thing because it dumped about half spool on a 30.
Yeah,
and before we even got going on it, and my dad's clearing the spread down and all that, and we just, you know, chase the thing down. And
well, TJ, you know, catching a marlin is kind of like finding a piece of gold. The longer you have it, the more valuable it gets.
Yeah.
So,
and the more you want to get another piece.
That's true. It's like a fever. It's a sickness. And it'll take you over. Yeah. And I just think it's great that you did it. I think it's great that you did it with your family.
Yeah.
You did it on your own boat. That's big time.
But that's the main thing, you know, because I could have spent a little bit of cash. It would have been cheaper than the boat and all the tackle and all that other stuff. But I could have spent a little cash and gone over to Bahamas or gone down to Costa Rica and like, get my shot at a couple.
Right.
And, that's why I reached out to you guys. And I want to do it here. And I want to do it on my boat. And I want to do it
Yes.
I want to put the work in.
Yes.
No, you do it your way, your boat, on your terms. And you made it happen.
Yeah.
You can give all the credit in the world to Norm for telling you this and taking you out. And you can give me credit and all that kind of shit. But the only person that deserves any credit is you. Because the captain is the guy that runs the ship. And you cannot catch a blue marlin without running the ship. And I think we might call this episode TJ's Running the Ship.
Yep. There you go.
Because basically that's what you did.
Yep. Yeah. No, you made it happen.
Yeah. Congratulations.
For sure.
Oh, thank you guys.
And thanks for coming in to being on the podcast to share the information with the audience. The audience is digging the blue marlin thing. This would be like the fourth or fifth podcast out of the 235 that we've uploaded that we've talked about blue marlin like this. And it's one of those topics that I don't care if you're catching catfish in a stream somewhere or you're getting black marlins off the coast of Australia. It intrigues people. It's a topic of conversation. And shit, Hemingway's best book ever.
Yeah.
The Old Man and the Sea. It's a story about the blue marlin.
And you know, let me tell you something. It's easier to catch a blue marlin in South Florida than it is to find a Michelob.
How about that?
Yeah. Bigger baits, a little heavier leader. That could be a slogan.
Yeah.
Pull a teaser.
Yep. Before we end the podcast, quick question. You more of a rum guy or a whiskey guy?
Oh, rum, all the way.
Rum guy. Yeah. You more of a rum guy or a whiskey guy?
I'll drink rum.
He's a rum guy. Yeah. See, I'm more of a whiskey guy.
Yeah. Well, nobody's perfect.
No, the reason I brought that up is because this whole Pilar thing. Like,
I love Pilar rum.
Everybody loves Pilar rum. It's a great rum. But what if you're a whiskey drinker?
You know, Hemingway was a whiskey drinker. He was not a rum drinker. He didn't drink rum.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
So, the reason I bring all that up is, TJ brought me a bottle of scotch.
Very nice.
Yeah, that's class.
Very nice. Yeah, that is class.
Well, now the company that has Pilar has a whiskey called the Hemingway, which they sent me a bottle.
That's interesting.
They sent me a bottle the other day and a hat and all that kind of thing.
Wait, whoa. Are you getting a little sponsorship thing going there?
It's not a sponsorship thing.
Maybe that's not the word I'm looking for. Just a little promo deal going?
No, here's how it works. I took one of the guys that's into that Pilar deal.
Yeah.
One of the investors. And he was in the first round, like way back when. He's a friend through the family. His daughter and my daughter went on a fishing trip the other day.
Really?
And when the daughter showed up.
Nice.
She showed up with two hats.
Nice.
A Hemingway hat for Hemingway whiskey. A Pilar hat for Pilar rum. But then she didn't bring me a bottle of Pilar. They brought me a bottle of whiskey. Yeah. So you guys are sitting around having your fancy drinks with your women and everything.
What?
Me and the Verso will be out back polishing off a bottle of whiskey like John.
Hey, there you go.
There you go.
TJ, thanks a million for coming in and telling the story. We're all real proud of you.
Yeah, man.
And
run that dog.
Run that fucking dog,
bro. I appreciate you guys.
We appreciate you. All right. Till next time. That's TJ Ralph, real guy. Run that dog.